Hello and welcome to OnlyFans on the Perfect Hat Trick podcast, where we talk more Euro 2020 matches and less over 18 content. Today on the podcast, we'll be doing part two of our team of the tournament for Euro 2020. We'll be going through the second holding midfielder, the three attackers and the one striker, and we'll kind of talk about the manager of the tournament as well. Today I'll be joined by Ankit, RCB and Chelsea fan from YouTube. I'm sure you guys must know him. He's been on before and he's a great guest and great friend of mine. So yeah, let's get straight into it and talk about the second half of the team of the tournament. So yeah, let's get straight into this, Ankit. I'm really excited to do this with you. First of all, I know you have some great opinions with some of these players, but this was my pick first of all from the last episode. Me and Arvin kind of decided him. But I think you do agree that Jorginho in this tournament is not even the Chelsea bias. It's just, you know, I say the second best player from Italy, apart from Spinazzola. He's allowed Italy to dominate most games from midfield. He's been that main player. He's allowed the other players to flourish. And, you know, winning second balls is pressing high up. Passing, you know, in between the lines, this long passing has been spot on. Do you have any other extra points to add about our DM, our second holding DM of the tournament?
Yeah, so I'll quickly add on there. Definitely, like, Daron, like, I totally agree with you there. Like, Roberto Mancini has got him as basically linchman of the Italian team. In fact, like, Jorginho has, if I'm not wrong, played every minute, if not for the third group game, where he was just brought off, you know, for tactical purposes because of the group stages, you know, that they were in. But Jorginho has been the man. Like, he's been underrated over the years, and this tournament has proved yet again that a registrar like him is something that a team can do with in this modern day in football, right? As in, the way he, you know, gets that Italian team ticking is second to none, and his passing range is actually underwhelmed by many, but actually it should be hyped up, in my opinion. And even like in the last game, like in the semi-final, right, as in the most crucial kick of the game, yes, it was a penalty kick. People say that it's just a penalty, it's easy, but no. Jorginho keeps his cool. He's not the highest goal scorer for Chelsea in the season for penalty, just like that. If that was it, then every penalty kick taker would have been the highest goal scorer, which isn't the case, but he is. And for Italy, I think he's proven it yet again on the international stage that he can do it. And I think even better than Spinazzola, because yes, unfortunately, he's missing due to injury. So if Italy go on to win the Euros, which is quite a probability, I can see Jorginho actually being the player of the tournament, really.
Yeah, great, great points. I mean, I like the point you made about his passing range. I think, you know, there's some instances where he has something, he doesn't really want to pass it long, but when he does pass it long, if you realise, it always hits straight on the money, his passes, whether it's long, whether it's short, he never really misses his passes. And, you know, he has that in his brain, that football intelligence to know when to pass, where to pass. And yeah, I mean, fair play to Jorginho in this tournament. I mean, Ballon d'Or shouts, quickly your take on this, Ankit. Obviously, you know, Messi's been superb, Lewandowski's been superb, Harry Kane even. Do you think if Italy go on to win the Euros, you know, fingers crossed they don't, but if they do, do you think he's up there with, you know, the Luka Modric-esque shouts from 2018?
I would not say yet, but there is a but here, because it depends on how Chelsea start their season. So if in the first couple of months, Chelsea are, like, you know, on top of the league and Jorginho happens to be the main man in midfield, which is quite possible, yes, I think he deserves it. Because don't forget, in the Champions League also, like, he got a couple of man of the matches at very important stage. And Euros is basically the biggest international football that we've had in a couple of years. So it cannot be ignored. And I think, yes, he can probably get there. Of course, there are better shots because others probably scored more goals. But Jorginho has to be in there with a shot.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great point. I mean, I think it's a Chelsea blue tinted glasses, but I do trust you to make these fair points. So, yeah, fair play on that. I mean, some other key mentions are Declan Rice, who's been, you know, underrated ball in this tournament. I think a lot of people are mentioning your other big players for England, you know, your defenders, but Rice has been low-key one of the best players. Same with Calvin Phillips, who's definitely been up there, you know, in the more advanced role. Sergio Busquets, since he's come in for Rodri in the first game week, you know, the second one where he came in, he's been flawless in the Spanish midfield. But, you know, Jorginho, unless he performs a stinker in the final, I mean, fingers crossed. I mean, I don't know, it's sticky because I want England to win, but I don't want Jorginho to fail. You know, if he does make a mistake, then it could go out the window, but I think he has been one of the best DMs, and if not, the player of the tournament. So let's talk about the second player, Ankit. I want to talk, this is your choice, purely your choice. I didn't really have a say in this particular one. Steven Zuber for Switzerland. I believe all I know is he's got a mass amount of assists, especially in the games he's played, especially against France. He got a few for Seferovic, I'm not mistaken. And I wouldn't you to tell me, Ankit. You just explain to me and persuade me and the listeners why he's been, you know, your favourite winger and one of the best players of the tournament.
Yeah, so what does a winger do? A winger is someone who basically takes the person on, and primarily the person kind of goes and creates chances. for Switzerland, if not for Zuber, they wouldn't have scored, I think, any of the goals that they did against Turkey. I know people say it's just Turkey, but, you know, like we spoke again, Taron, earlier, that game, basically, Turkey turned up for a change, and Steven Zuber scoring, you know, getting those assists, those three assists, I think it's some kind of a record there itself, right? Was not a simple task. And trust me, even that game, he would have had goals himself if not for Turkish defending, right? As in, he made a lot of chances. I think that game in itself had a record of number of chances or number of shots in the game. And he himself had a lot of shots along with creating chances. And not just that, I think the game against France. Now, France, they are really quick on the wings, right? Someone who has not played a left wing back. Zuber is actually a midfielder. He's an attacking player. He does not play left wing back. So for him to basically, acclimatize to that position and make it his own and actually create that chance for Seferovic, who finally scored, was basically just the kick that France needed. And that's something that Switzerland needed on the positive side. And that's what exactly happened. Zuber, I think, was great going front as well as, you know, in defense. So I think him, you know, doing well along with Switzerland doing well is no coincidence. Yes, people speak about Shaqiri. Yes, Shaqiri scored very important goals, as is Seferovic. But it was Zuber who was involved in almost every goal that Switzerland created or, you know, scored. And that's where I think he deserves a plaudit for someone who does not play regularly there. And he's not a big name either. So you wouldn't expect that. And that's where he, you know, grabbed his chance with both hands.
You persuaded me, Anke. I do agree. He has been one of the best wings of the tournament. And I know he has been, you know, when he came in for Ricardo Rodriguez, when he went back into left centre-back, it caused a lot more goals. You know, the first few games Switzerland were incredibly poor against Wales, against Italy. But as soon as Zuber came in, it did make a difference. And that's why they won them two massive games. But let's move on to the next player. Let's talk about the attack midfielder in this kind of 4-2-3-1. Oh, Pedri, for me, this tournament, when there was a lot of talk before the tournament about Pedri. And I'm not gonna lie, I haven't seen much of him at Barcelona this season. But he has been starting a lot under Ronald Koeman this season. And Trincao's been out of the team, you know. Ousmane Dembele's been out of the team. And Pedri's been starting, you know, 18 years of age. And I think he is a little Andres Iniesta, Anke. And I think that might be... I can see your face right now. I don't know if you're too impressed at me right now. But he is, for me, the little Iniesta. Spain's best player of the tournament by far. I think Laporte could have been up there. But Pedri has been that clockwork in the midfield, transitioning the midfield to the attack, you know. Oh, you know, played every single minute. Can I just mention, two extra times within 3 days, and he only, I think, missed the last minute of one of them. So he's played, 240 minutes in 3 days. Oof, I mean, Pedri, Ankit, isn't he an absolute baller? And he's going to be an absolute star for the future.
Absolutely, right? You know, I think the difference maker that really Spain had in the tournament was a game against Croatia. Until then, I think they were very underwhelming. And that is when Pedri rose to the occasion. Like, you know, that game basically had attacking football at its best. And Pedri was at the fulcrum of those attacks that were made by Spain. All of them, in fact. Like, a person at this age, you know, keeping Thiago out of the team. I know Thiago is, you know, by some Liverpool fans and ex-Bayern Munich fans told as the greatest playmaker ever. But no, Pedri was there to displace him. And I think Pedri was a person who not only attacked, I think he's underrated in defense as well. He can actually, you know, come in with those challenges, and he makes a lot of runs as well, which people don't notice. But I did see him play a lot of passes, which were actually through the lines. And that's something that Spain were missing, because they don't have that proper number nine. And that's where they needed those runners and someone to play those through balls. And Pedri was a person for them. So I think, as you hit the nail on the head, he has played back-to-back-to-back extra time games as well. Like, you know, at his age, for that level of maturity, he deserves a lot of praise. Obviously, I believe there must be other mentions. I'm assuming you will be discussing about Damsgaard, because there were a lot of young players who played in the number 10 or attacking midfield role. But for me, yes, Pedri would definitely, you know, top it all.
Yeah, you put the nail on the head as well. So mature, you know, 120-minute games in a row. The only mistake I think of the tournament is that own goal where, you know, Unai Simon definitely could have done better. But apart from that, flawless, and he is a big star. He could be the next Iniesta, like I said. I mean, I'll kind of discuss Sterling, if you don't mind, guys. It's a tournament I've been watching countless amount of times, this tournament, Sterling, whether it's pubs, whether it's my friend's house and everything. But, you know, Sterling, he's proved that was wrong in this tournament. You know, before the tournament, he wasn't playing much Man City. It would usually be Foden, Fran Torres starting for City, but he's come in. Gareth Southgate is stuck with the players he trusted from the World Cup. He's brought back in Sterling and Kane and all these other players, and he's really been paid back with his debt. He scored four goals from a wing position in a system that's not too attacking, I wouldn't say. And he's allowed Luke Shaw to be one of the best left backs of the tournament with them dropping inside and allowing him to overlap. Always taking players on, always looking forward. He showed his experience. He's played pretty much every single game, every single minute of this tournament. You know, Sterling, I know I'm gassing up English players a lot, obviously, but I just think he's been flawless in this tournament. And if he goes on and scores in the final, I personally think he is the player of the tournament, because I just think he's been superb. He's been the reason that England have been playing so well. Everything usually goes to him, from Declan Rice to Sterling, and then they'll pass. Will he drive? Will he pass Saka, Mount? Will he take on a player? Will he pass to Shaw? Will he pass to Kane? You know, Sterling's been amazing. And I think a lot of people agree that, you know, even the Man City haters out there, you know, the Oil Club haters, I think they'll agree that Sterling's been key. But, you know, Anke, let's move on to Patrick Schick now. Yeah, you agreed that with me that Patrick Schick's been the best striker. There's not many strikers, I'd say, at this tournament who've kind of really shone and put their name in lights. I'm looking at my wall chart right now. You know, Seferovic, maybe. I was going to say Morata. There's not really many, you know. There's not many. Lukaku's been okay. But, you know, the goal of the tournament, first of all, he has scored the goal of the tournament. I mean, arguably, I think it was definitely key to them reaching the quarterfinals. 5 goals. Anke, hit me with Patrick Schick. What did you like about him in this tournament?
Well, I think that the biggest chat there is that basically he got my favorite team, Netherlands, out of the tournament, right? And he's someone who basically, you know, people not expect that he would be, you know, getting those long shots in, but I think he was there at the right time at the right, you know, in the box as well. Like, he scored both the kind of goals that he did. So I think the kind of level that he's shown in this tournament and the consistency even is not something that we've seen from him in the past. And Patrick Schick can only go from strength to strength, because I think the key was obviously that goal, that the wonder goal that he scored, that gave him a lot of confidence, I believe. And, you know, we've seen him actually, you know, definitely improving from then on. Yes, his overall gameplay was not that good, I would say, in the first couple of games, but we definitely saw him in much improved performance in the latter couple of games that we did. And like I said, like he's got a lot of strength as well, which is, again, a great, you know, a virtue to have, because not many strikers in this day and age have that. And someone who's, you know, they're in the box as well as, you know, having the strength and getting those long shots, something that you cannot ignore. He scored goals, like, you know, in all the 3 categories in this tournament. And I think, like you said, not many strikers have impressed consistently, and he has been there. I think he scored, if I'm not wrong, in every game that he's played almost. And that tells a lot. I know Ronaldo scored a lot of goals as well, but he's a penalty merchant for me. But yes, definitely Patrick Schick deserves it. Someone who's really up and coming and, you know, has to be in there.
The only game he didn't score was England game, which unfortunately I'm going to gas up England again. That defence is rock solid. But, you know, Schick, I think he does deserve a big transfer in this tournament. He's been, you know, that goal, first of all, the technique to from the halfway line to whip over Marshall. Oh, like, seriously superb. And, you know, like you said, not many strikers have performed, but Schick definitely will be looking for a bigger transfer away from Leverkusen, I feel, after this tournament. Let's talk about the manager now. I know before we kind of start recording, you were kind of saying, how do you pronounce this, Taren? How do you pronounce this? But I think it's Kasper Hjulmand. And, you know, first of all, I want to say for what he did for Christian Eriksen to get the team focused to reach the semi-finals of the Euros despite all the tragic incidents. Fair play to Kasper Hjulmand, but I'd say let's talk more about the tactics, because obviously I don't think tragic events should really determine whether our managers had a good tournament. The tactics to implement Denmark in that really compact system, the wing-backs going forward, the attack looking, you know, Damsgaard looking so fluid, everything looking beautiful. I want you to talk about Kasper Hjulmand. Obviously, you're not trying to pronounce the name, Anke, unless you want to, but a little about why Hjulmand has been for you and the manager of the tournament.
Yes, I don't want any Danish fans coming to me and, you know, beating me up, but definitely, like, this is probably the manager of the tournament, as you said, right? As in, deserves a shout for sure. The way Denmark were playing the first couple of games, right? As in, 1.5 games, I would say, like, definitely, they were really underwhelming. Of course, the incident that happened, and that's one of the reasons. But then, after that, to change the system, and what he did is actually he played, of course, my Andreas Christensen at right center back, where he could probably, you know, play a lot. Like, he's a player who plays on the ball very well. And he was key in that defense, basically someone who could pass the ball as well as defend well. But the wing backs, right? As you said, like, I think Mele was probably a shout out again for a left wing back, or if you have played a system for the team with tournament, but he got them bombing on. And of course, with the midfield that he had, He has to thank, you know, his midfield because they were consistent. Yes, they didn't get a lot of injuries after Eriksen, of course, but that's something that helped. But that's because the players trusted him as well. It shows in the pitch, and that's what exactly happened. Like a player like Damsgaard that we mentioned previously, right? As in, he's so young. For him to be taking those shots from far, and, you know, he missed a lot of chances as well. But that's because the manager has trusted him and told him, obviously, you know, off the pitch that go and get your shots in because that's the game you play best. It is very clear to see. And Denmark, the way, you know, they were motivated after the episode, but more importantly, after the formation changed, there was no coincidence. And definitely the manager was a person who deserves the coach of the tournament.
Yeah, like you said, the Damsgaard point, I really enjoyed that. He's given them the freedom to miss chances. And then he, in the end, scored a banger in the end. So I think he's a class manager, a great man manager to get the team, you know, together after that incident. But in terms of tactics as well, very dispute going forward in the midfield, the wing-backs, the centre-backs. It was a very beautiful harmony with the tactics. But, you know, we've talked about Kasper Hjulmand a lot. And I think another noble mention could be Gareth Southgate. I think it's fair to say that he's had a very solid tournament for England. You know, a lot of doubters as well before the tournament, especially me, and he's really proved me wrong. Obviously, Mancini has had a wonderful tournament with Italy. But I think Hjulmand, for what he's done for Eriksen, including everything else he's done, overall, that full package, I'd say he is the man of the tournament. But anyways, guys, we've kind of come to the end of this particular episode, the part two of the team of the tournament. Tomorrow, it'll be the big one, the England versus Italy preview. We're going through a combined 11 for both teams, as in like the best kind of 11 of the both two teams. A little about what we can expect from the both teams, the weaknesses, the strengths, all of that. Catch us tomorrow, 9 a.m. UK time. But anyways, guys, thanks for my guests for coming on. Thanks for listening. Have a great day and take care.